Now, I suppose you all know how ordinary television works.
You photograph something.
Sure, I do. You photograph something, then the photograph is split up into millions of tiny pieces, and they go whizzing through the air down to your TV set where they're all put together again in the right order.
You should open your mouth a little wider when you speak.
Hey, Dean, other than Legion, what else have you been watching on TV this week?
Well, the wife and I have been watching Christine Moss Stares at Things, a.k.a. The Handmaid's Tale. We're only a few episodes in. I heard it gets better as it goes, but so far it's just very slow. And again, she just, the constant looks of her looking disdainful at everything is slightly boring for me.
Well, I finished, finally, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix. Loved it.
How's Melissa Joan Hart working these days?
Yeah, she's not on it. And then I moved into, and in 2 days, binged all of Stranger Things.
Definitely watch Stranger Things. I'm all ready to drink my new Coke and get all my 80s fix now out of all the product placement, which I know people were complaining about, but after the third episode, it's good. It's way better than season two.
I thought it was great. I loved it. I have started The Rook on Stars. It's a new show on Stars. Looks like it's pretty good. The premiere grabbed me, so I'm going to stick with it.
I watched The Society on Netflix. It's like a Lord of the Flies type thing where some kids randomly get brought to their town with no parents and no one adults in the area. The premise is awesome, but it's just a Netflix CW show. It's as if the CW is allowed to say the F-bomb every 5 seconds.
Mike Tyson Mysteries, one of my favorite shows, has started back up for its fourth season. Listen, everybody, get on this show. It's 11 minutes of your life, 10 times a year. Watch it. It's hilarious. Norm MacDonald as the pigeon, just perfect.
If you want to know how terrible kids have it today and also like to see a penis every 5 to 6 minutes, watch Euphoria on HBO.
And lastly, I have been watching all of the World Series of Poker. One poker show I do not miss every year. It's like 5 hours a day. It's filling up my DVR. I forward through all the BS, but watch the card playing. So much poker. I love it.
If you can get past the beginning of the Aziz Ansari apology, it's pretty funny afterwards.
Love to watch TV, Mike?
You bet.
You like the killings, huh?
What do you think life's all about?
Insert music here.
Data. My beautiful boy.
This is Mike TV, episode 7, in which we will be covering FX's Legion, which is airing for its third and final season. This is Legion episode 3, entitled Chapter 22. My name is Lisa, and also joining me is my co-host, Dean. Hi, Dean. How'd you like this episode?
Lisa, I loved it. I hated it. I was confused by it. I had every emotion there was.
Oh, boy. So, all right, I want to give our overall thoughts and then we'll dive in. So, I've watched it twice. I know you've watched it multiple times more than I have, and I'm glad for that because I hope you have answers. I have questions. I have questions. Here are my overall thoughts. So, I loved it. Love, love, loved it. Upon my second viewing, and really right before my second viewing, I thought, this is really a Professor X origin story. So, even if you're not watching Legion, we predicted this would be a bottle episode. It is a bottle episode. And even if you've never seen an episode of Legion, but you know all about everything there is to know about Professor X, well, guess what? He builds Cerebro in this. So it is for sure 100% a Professor X origin story. My other thought is, oh, I could watch Harry Lloyd and Stephanie Corneliuson. I could watch them do anything all day long. They are beautiful. They were wonderful. Everything was just perfect in this episode, just stunning to behold and watch. And their performances were amazing. Of course, Harry Lloyd, I love him. I loved him in Game of Thrones. Loved him in Counterpart. Everybody, please watch Counterpart. And Stephanie Corneliuson is from, we know her from Mr. Robot. Which she's fabulous in that as well, but she was just great as Gabrielle Haller. And my final thought, before I kick it over to you, Dean, and this is, this is a time travel story. It's a Professor X time travel story, and it does something so cool that I've only ever seen one other time in television in relation to time travel. And so I'm going to call it, it does the Hodor thing. And that is for anybody who watched Game of Thrones. And even if you didn't, I won't really spoil this, but I'll say Hodor is a character who, while he's in the past, events that are affecting him in the past by someone who has time traveled into his past begin to unfold in the present time and play out and become the major occurrence that fulfills why he was the way he was. And it all is just like this time travel loop. So this is, in summarize, what we see in this episode, I believe, is current time is actually affecting the past and is the cause of that occurrence in the past. And I'm speaking of Gabrielle's freaking out and thinking that she's being haunted is David actually trying to talk to her from the present. And that's what causes her unraveling and psychotic breakdown and possible death. We're not really sure what's happening with her at the end there. But so that's my favorite type of time travel story. And I hope I've explained it well. What are your thoughts?
I completely agree with your thoughts on the Hodor situation. Now, I will liken it to the Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban movie, not the book, where it's also the same concept of Hermione with the time turner. And
sure.
Earlier we see events that kind of come to fruition later when they go back in time. Same concept, though. The idea that time is a loop. Remember episode one of this season, we were told time is not a river. It is a jungle. So it's all kind of mushed together.
Right. But we were told time is a hallway too. And it has doors that go to the past and the future. Right?
The front and back. Well, that's how Switch sees when she time travels, but her lessons tell her time is not a river, it's a jungle.
Oh.
So I don't know. We'll see it. This episode was for a Legion fan. Like, if you're a fan of the show, this episode was awesome. If you were maybe disappointed the first season when you tried to watch this thinking it was an X-Men show and it had very little connection, this is your full-on connection to the X-Men. But then at the same time, if you hated season two when they would have these random offshoot episodes that had nothing or very little to do with the main plot, this is one of those episodes that would drive you crazy as well, too. So technically, this episode was awesome. It was fantastic. It was beautiful. There was so much going on. But I can see this being the one where a lot of people get grumpy again, just like last season. But overall, I thought it was amazing. At the same time, I watched this episode 5 times in the last 4 days. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you what the fuck's going on. It seemed like, you know, if you want to take it at face value, it's a time travel episode, but so much of it seemed like it was more than time travel. I think there might be a lot of memories / even false memories going on with this episode, kind of interwoven with what we might actually think that we're seeing.
That scares me. And talk about, we always say, you know, what's going on inside David Haller's head. In this case, it's, you know, what's going on inside of Charles Xavier's head? What's going on inside of Gabrielle Haller's head? You know, so we have like possibly three in Farouk's head or the astral plane. I think we had some astral plane in this.
Yeah, there were definitely multiple points throughout the show where I kept thinking, okay, we're seeing this through David's perception. Oh, no, wait. I think this part's through Charles's, Xavier's perception. Oh, no, wait. I think this part is through Gabrielle's perception. Oh, no, wait. I think this is something that the Shadow Kings put. Yeah, exactly. Every twist and turn that could be thrown at us here is thrown at us.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into it. The show opens, you know, we don't get any fanfare, no previously on. It just goes straight into the same Yellow Submarine font credits, or FX Presents in conjunction with Marvel Studio. And then Legion, you know, is in on little baby blocks, the word Legion. That's cute. But we see David as a baby. Could he be any cuter? And we're getting an opening monologue. There's a lot of monologue. There's a lot of that in this episode. So I think that people who weren't excited about This is a Professor X origin story. I'm telling you, get excited for that. I think people may have even found the pacing slow, but it opens with a monologue from Gabrielle. She's just kind of setting the tone, and her thought while she's talking, sharing her inner thoughts, we're seeing her flash from either living in this beautiful house to being in what's clearly a mental institution. So we get to more to that later. So this was definitely a stage setting scene. And then it cuts to Charles is packing a suitcase and telling her that he has to leave town. He's found someone like him. He has to go to Morocco. Gabrielle doesn't want him to go. She's pleading with him not to leave. But he leaves anyway. He says he's got to. So what did you think of these opening kind of stage setting scenes? Clearly we're going to go back before this time and ahead of this time. So I kind of call this the stage setting time. This is the time right as David's leaving, which creates the Hodor events that unfold.
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and bring this up now because the last couple times I watched this show, I tried to take extensive notes based solely on what Gabrielle is wearing throughout each scene.
Awesome.
Because she wears no less than, and then I might have undercut this, but no less than 12 different outfits in this episode.
Proof that we are not a sexist show when the man is paying attention to the costuming more than the woman.
And not even
gender neutral or whatever.
Well, and not even, you know, Lenny and girl Carrie's costumes, because at least if you could say it would be sexist if I was paying attention to theirs, because it's a little more. But no, she's wearing 12 different outfits. And in this very first scene, we actually see her wear 5 different outfits.
Oh, break it down.
So at the very beginning, she's at the crib. She's wearing a lime green dress with a green sweater. We see this later on. I believe when Charles is leaving, we see her actually, as she starts touching the mobile, it cuts and she's playing with the mobile. She's already wearing something different, a striped blouse, which we see later on a couple of times when she's getting manipulated by the Shadow King. We see a cut to her in the bed with a nightgown, which we see several times throughout the episode. Right. And then we see her one last time at the end with a blouse, which looks like a bunch. At first I thought it was flowers, but it's a bunch of parasols, umbrellas all over her blouse. And she has that a few times later on in the crib room as well, too. But I was trying to figure out if there was some connection to the scene she's wearing things versus when she's not wearing, to see if there were things that were real or not. I couldn't figure out a code. I couldn't figure out a pattern. I may not have watched well enough, but I just couldn't figure it out. But I did at least get this thing, especially from this first scene, the monologue she's giving, and even a scene which seems like it's a continuation from when she's over his crib to where she's playing with the mobile. She already is, like, it's showing her in different clothes. So either we're seeing, I don't know if they're using that as a passage of time or if they're using it as what I kind of think. And with this episode, I think the plot of the episode is so concise. You know, it's David basically seeing himself as a baby. So it's easy to kind of jump forward and backward with this. I was trying to decide if this whole time travel, because it's so far for Switch, which we'll talk about later, and her powers aren't necessarily that strong, if it's not just her traveling through time, but it's almost David grasping onto that time and kind of creating the memory himself through things maybe he remembers as a little baby. Because we do see them in the mental institution, obviously, but we never see any time between the time we think is between when they leave the mental institution and when he's born. We never see her pregnant. We never see any of the relationship between them. And so I keep wondering if most of this, especially the visuals inside the house, are almost David reading his own memory or trying to recall his own memory as an infant. And that's why we see a lot of perception from his point of view, from the crib. That's why we see a different clothes on the mom constantly, because he remembers her wearing different clothes, or they're kind of similar, but they're not the same. She's always wearing green, but they're always different shades of green, different things like that. Like I said, I was trying to put something together. I don't know if I put it together or not, but there definitely was something going on with the fact that she's constantly changing, or that her clothes are different in back-to-back scenes over and over throughout the episode.
Sure. You know, that's really interesting because I took it as it was a montage of just like day in and day out of their happy life. And then as the show unfolded, it became clear that those different scenes in the outfit observation was really keen. I think, Dean, because I didn't even catch that at all, to think, to go back and think about it in that way. But that could be represented in all of the future scenes of this episode.
Right.
That, you know, because we kind of get a glimpse of all five outfits in that first opening montage, but then as the show unfolds, because it does jump around in time so much, so it doesn't tell it linearly, but if you're able to follow the outfits, you can unravel it and put it in the correct order in chronological. Also, though, it is evident that a lot of it is from David's point of view, at David the adult's point of view, who's observing them and trying to reach Gabrielle in particular, and is struggling to do so and using all kinds of crazy antics to do it. But this could also be all the multiple times that he has to go back and see different days and we got to go back, because it's evident that they're doing this multiple times. So he might be saying, take me back to the same day, and she might be, it's the next day or the day before. So the outfit changes could also be from David's perspective, just seeing different days of the same kind of day in, day out life, which may or may not be real, which is the part that really boggles the mind.
Right. I definitely, they didn't say this explicitly, but you're right. If you watch the show, you have to, or if, you know, you're not even watch the show, but if you watch any show with time travel, you have to assume if there's not a montage of them going back multiple times, that that's happening. I thought the same thing, that even though they haven't shown it yet, I kind of felt, and based off a little bit of the previews they showed for next week, it does seem like next week's episode is going to be more of this, what's actually happened from this episode, but from the point of view from other people, because they're showing Sid and the others kind of seeing effects from time travel. Right. So I was kind of thinking the same thing, where we're going to see that this isn't just a one-time full-length scene, that actually he's been jumping back multiple times, or he's tried this more than once. The only thing from this episode that didn't give that away was, you would have thought at some point when he's trying to talk to Gabrielle, he would have said, why does this keep not, you know, he doesn't necessarily refer to it not working more than once, but it definitely could be that. And I think that's the most likely. Basically, I think Legion has fucked with my head for so long at this point. I just felt that, well, surely all this stuff is for a purpose, and I got to read between, you know, it's like a, the very first episode of the whole series with that dude in the mental institute in Clockworks, who like hangs out in trees and
right.
mossy thing, and you're like, that has to be something, and then it's just some weirdo hanging out in moss in grassland and back in the background. So it may just be trying to jump at shadows, you know, pun intended for the shadow. Yeah, I tried to figure something out, but I couldn't.
Well, and there's, you know, so maybe I'm not even sure that we should talk about this episode scene by scene. Maybe we should talk about it time frame by time frame, and we should put it in order, and then maybe we'll solve it by the end. This is good podcasting. You know, this is a little behind the scenes, folks. You want to try that and see how that goes?
All right. So then I suppose we should start off with the mental institution, right?
Yes, I do believe. So throughout the episode, there are some scenes of Gabrielle in a mental institution. And then very quickly, we start to see scenes where Charles is also in the mental institution. And we open on a scene. I have a question for you on this one. And I didn't think to look it up. Bad on me. But Charles is, we open and see cut back from a commercial or something, and Charles is in a mental institution being interviewed by one of the psychiatrists there. And then he starts reading the psychiatrist's mind, and the man is saying, oh, you know, the doctor is saying this man will never be anything. He's useless, you know, whatever. Is that actor that's playing that psychiatrist, is that Charles Dance, who played Tywin Lannister on Game of Thrones? Ooh. Looks so much like him.
I don't know. He did kind of look like, now that I didn't even think about it, because his hair is so white in it and everything.
So anyway, something to
looking it up. I don't think so. Looking it on here now.
Well, all right. So I'll keep talking about the mental institution. So these are all scenes that are spliced throughout the episode, and we start to understand sort of the timeline. These are the earliest scenes, but so Charles meets Gabrielle in the mental institution. Well, first he just sees her, and she's just kind of, let me just say this. The mental institution had so much reminiscence of Clockworks, right? It was very parallel with David's experience in Clockworks. Same thing, David, you know, knowing that the doctors didn't see him ever getting better, he was able to read that in them. And him meeting Sid. And also, I even thought some of the other people in the mental institution with Gabrielle and Charles even reminded me of Lenny. And like you said, the drooling guy and all of that seemed to all be represented in this mental institution, which we didn't get a name. And we didn't really get a time frame, but we are led to believe that Gabrielle is traumatized. One of the other doctors tells Charles, he tries to read her mind, and all he hears are screams, horrified screams of terror. And so he asks the doctor what's wrong with her. She's catatonic, right? She just kind of just sits there. And the doctor says she was in the camps. I kind of took that as the concentration camps, and because they do reference the war, and I'm led to believe this is somewhere shortly after World War II.
Yep. Well, if you go by the origin of Xavier and Gabrielle from the actual comics, they do meet in a mental institution after World War II. In the comics, I believe Magneto's actually there as well, too. Which he's obviously not in this iteration of it, although they show some people playing chess at some point, so you never know. But they do meet in there, and in the comics, she is a survivor of a concentration camp. It definitely, I mean, unless they're just going full-on alternate history type thing, it definitely seems to be pointing at that. We do see the flashback later on of Charles as a soldier. He mentions, like you said, being in the war. It does kind of finally fit and does kind of start to maybe answer our questions. You know, my question from day one has been, what frickin' year is it? But if this is post-World War II, or even, you know, around then, it makes sense that if David's 32 or 33 years old, that it would be in the 60s or 70s at some point.
So, and with his hippie commune, right, that is straight up. So yeah, absolutely. I agree. So, Charles becomes just obsessed with Gabrielle. We see another scene in a future scene in the episode where he's drawing her, and she's still catatonic, and he tries to read her mind again, and he still hears the same screams, but this time she awakes from her catatonic state. And that is when we actually hear David, future or now David, I'll say adult David's, voiceover. He's talking with Switch, and he's saying, why did it bring us back this far? He's asking Switch, like, we, you know, and she said, I don't know, I've never come back this far before. So this is how we know as viewers that this is the earliest stages of the travel, of the time travel. And Switch does tell David these times must be linked somehow. And then David has the epiphany, oh, this is how they meet. This is, and he says, and then he chuckles and, you know, says, oh, in a mental institution. And she says, why is that funny? And he says, must run in the family. Such great writing there. But when Gabrielle finally does wake up, then that's when she and Charles, their love story unfolds. And we get several scenes of them falling in love, which are beautiful and wonderful.
Yeah, they all completely mimic the pilot. Not only do they meet in the mental institution, but in the pilot, Sid sketches David. And so we see the mirror of that with Charles sketching Gabrielle. Oh. We see the scene of them holding hands in the hallway, which in the pilot, they're holding the rope between them, or the scarf between them, kind of holding hands, walking through. We see Gabrielle and Charles first kiss out on the balcony, watching the stars, where if you remember from the pilot, David and Sid's first quote kiss, it's not a real kiss, but their quote kiss is looking out through the window and pretending they're outside, and David kind of puts his reflection onto her reflection and they kiss. We even see some of the same music at the same time. In fact, we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in just a second when they leave the institution, but they play She's a Rainbow by Rolling Stones. That's played the first time David's kind of fallen in love. And then, of course, there's the cherry pie that they're eating, where David's favorite thing when we first meet him was cherry pie.
He could eat any
cherry pie. So a lot of parallels, the way that they met versus the way Sid and David meet, which, again, I know we're kind of trying to do this linearly, but
I've messed up both of our notes. I know.
I don't know if any of this stuff actually happened. This is just more proof to me that I think David's almost creating this based off his own memories.
Well, then I'm not ready to go there yet, but actually I am, because there's one other thing in that mental institution that we did not talk about yet, and it is that fucking doll.
The angriest boy in the world.
That fucking doll is the scary. Who would put a doll like that anywhere near a human being, let alone in a crib with a baby? But the doll's origin is in some creepy box that is sitting on Gabrielle's lap during her catatonic state. And even Charles opens the box and looks at the doll and is clearly weirded out by it and quickly just closes it. So we know that this doll came from Gabrielle, was passed into David, and is somehow a totem for Farouk, or for the Shadow King. I'm beginning to wonder if Farouk was in Gabrielle maybe we're not seeing all of this through David. We're seeing it through Farouk, or we're seeing it through how Farouk wants to show it to David, or somehow I still think Farouk is pulling some strings here.
We definitely see multiple scenes throughout the episode. And we saw this in the last season of that scene with, like, you know, it's an overlay with the veil and Farouk kind of behind it, but it's the current Farouk as opposed to him in his old Moroccan garb. So it almost, I don't know. I don't know if I think that maybe we saw him kind of intercept Switch in the two episodes ago. Right. And so I don't know if maybe we're going to find out he figured out a way to kind of hijack and hitch a ride. Maybe he's back there, or if maybe Farouk, even in that timeline, has sensed this power of David coming through and he's kind of already connected. Or maybe we even figure out that, yes, Charles was searching for someone, he finds Farouk, but maybe we'll find out that Farouk already knew about Charles and was already searching him out and kind of, you know, leading him to himself. And so there's definitely a lot of questions when it comes to, again, this whole episode. We cannot in any way, I don't think in any way we can just see this as a straight flashback of anything, or even, because it's all muddled by David, by memory, by maybe some interference from Farouk. There's so much going on here.
Oh boy. There is. So I'm getting more and more confused. We're supposed to be a non-confusing. Let's see if we can, let's see. Okay. Let's keep diving. So anything else about, okay. So then, their love story continues to unfold. Now, before we talk about the final scenes at the mental institution, we have seen throughout the episode the way present David, time-traveling David, is trying to reach Gabrielle primarily, but it seems like there is that one scene where he's trying to reach Charles in the past as well. And the method he uses is to play all this cool, groovy music and have all of his hippie commune dance around, and somehow they are able to hear the music, and that enables them in the past to tune in and be able to hear his voice. Because we do see a scene from the mental institution where Charles is sleeping and he awakes, and it seems like he's startled by what he has seen, which was clearly David's attempt to reach him. I'm sure he thinks it's just a dream. But that's when that's the scene where Gabrielle comes in, gets into bed with him, and she says, "I had the most beautiful dream.
Let's make sure the first time he hears it, remember, is actually when, just because I think it's a great scene, we need to make sure we hit for Xavier as far as, you know, being his origin, which you think. The first time is when he wakes up and he opens the curtains, and that's when we kind of see a backstory on him.
Is that from, oh, that is from the mental institution.
Walking through the fields. Yes. And we kind of, and this is obviously kind of a mental dream, but he opens this tunnel, and that's when we kind of see this black and white. And this is the one scene where I feel like we're actually seeing a pure memory of Charles. And this is also what kind of makes me think that if we are supposed to be thinking of this as David looking backwards, is he almost reading the minds and memories of the people he's watching? You know, it's as if he's so powerful that not only is he back in time, but he's reading their minds. And so Xavier is seeing this memory of him back in the war. He gets attacked by the German soldier, mm-hmm. and he's about to get strangled to death. And we see his power come out, which I love the way they show his power of kind of like the waves. I think it's a very interesting way to show that, as opposed to just hearing him or mm-hmm. you know, in the cartoon, seeing like literal lines coming out. You see these heat waves come out, and he tells the soldier to kill himself. We see that he's obviously bothered by that, which I think we're supposed to assume is why he checks himself into this mental institution.
Right.
Because he definitely seemed to be there on his own volition. And so we see that the first time. But yes, yeah, so then the second time is when Gabriel comes in. You can go ahead with.
Okay, so wait, I want to talk about what I thought about that scene, because this was how hard and difficult it, I mean, I'm not complaining about this episode. I loved it, but this is how confusing it is to get mixed up in the timeline. I thought that when he got up out of bed, so we see another, like you said, another scene where he awakes, gets up out of bed, pulls back curtains, and he's walking into this beautiful open field and goes through a clearing and into a cellar door. And then the picture goes to that black and white, and suddenly he is in uniform and he is fighting with the Nazi soldier. My thought was that's while he was in Morocco, and that was Farouk fighting him in the astral plane. I didn't even think that, oh gosh, this is his war horror story, what caused him to be in the mental institution anyway, which makes much more sense, your perspective of it. But I really thought this was some sort of Farouk manipulation, but I like your explanation better.
I still think we're going to see the battle between Charles and Farouk. If you remember from season two, there's the one scene which actually you see a little bit of an overlay on it in this episode, mm-hmm. where it's Farouk sitting there with the women beside him, and in his glasses you see the reflection of almost like explosions and a battle going off, and then he just drops dead. And we get that when Charles has Cerebro on later, and he's showing what's going to happen when he meets Farouk. We see that same scene where he's sitting on one side of the table and Farouk's on the other side of the table. And so I think we'll still see that. But yeah, I definitely think that flashback was of his wartime. Maybe even the first time he used his powers that extreme. I'm got to assume that's the first time he's maybe had to use his powers to actually hurt somebody.
But I like your theory that that David is seeing a dream in Charles's head.
Yeah.
I really like that. Okay, so I should have mentioned that throughout the love story of Gabrielle and Charles falling in love in the mental institution, Charles does explain to her that he's a telepathic, and he explains to her how it works, and she doesn't seem too freaked out by it. And he does that early on. So you can, he also says how he doesn't feel like it should be used for any ill will. Oh, she calls him out on it. She says, you know, what did you find that out when you read my mind? So she right. knows that he has that power. And then he explains it and then says that once he realized he had that power, he decided, he put it to his mind that he was only going to use it, you know, in times where he felt like he could help people. So he's an honorable stand-up guy, which of course we've already known.
Is he though? Because he did kind of do the same thing David thought he did, which was, hey, I'm just trying to help, but I still went straight up into your mind without consent.
Mm.
And that seems to be the theme of this show, is even when you think you're doing the right thing, once you literally enter somebody's mind, it's kind of the equivalent of, you know, entering yeah. them without consent.
Okay, so Team Shadow King, you mean to tell me you're not sympathetic and more on Team David after this episode?
Well, I mean, Charles Xavier is kind of a shitty dad to begin with. He also leaves his wife just to go meet someone who's his equal, so.
Or does she die? Okay, we'll get there. All right. So when she comes into his bedroom and says, I've just had the most lovely dream, which is a nice parallel after he's had what he thinks is kind of a nightmare.
Right.
She says, we were in this beautiful house and having a beautiful home. And he says, we can have that. And, you know, she says, no, we're in the madhouse, dear. You know, that's not going to happen. And he says, no, I know how to do something. I can do something. And she says, is it a trick? In that case, what are we waiting for? Which I loved. And then it's a beautiful montage of them hand in hand strolling out of the mental institution in slow motion to the Rolling Stones song, which I love. She Comes in Colors. And then as they are, you know, they're just basically cheered and applauded, and they're so happy and smiling, and they walk straight out the front doors of the mental institution down a pristine block of homes to a beautiful mansion, which is the mansion that the show opens on, where we see them living as a happily married couple. So we are now to understand, Dean, that this happy home was all part, much like the White Room and the special place where David and Sid could touch, that Charles has created this mind area for he and Gabrielle to have this wonderful life. How is this happening?
Okay, good. I'm glad that you went there, because they didn't leave the mental institution, right? Like, that's my thought, because it's nighttime when they're in the bed, it's daytime when they leave. Obviously, everything he's creating. Yeah. And then there are so many parallels from this point on, mm-hmm. when they're in the house, that seem like they're still in the mental institution.
Right. So
you can even say that every time she flashes back, she's always, I don't even know if she ever actually woke up to begin with. Oh. I really don't know. Because when he first meets her, I don't know if you notice this, but when he first meets her, he sees her in the mental institution. She's staring at him. But then when it cuts to him walk over to her, she's completely turned around from him.
Right.
And then later on, when we first see the angriest boy in the world doll, he's like looking at it, and then he looks up, she's staring at him. But then it cuts back and she's not staring at him. Then he tries to mind read her and fix her. He opens his eyes. She's just not in the chair anymore. She's standing over by the window. And this is when we see her awake for the first time. I don't know what of any of this was real. And then even the fact when Switch says the house and this time are connected, it makes me think one of these things is in somebody else's mind, which again, I don't know if they're in the house and all of this is her remembering the time. Like, that's what I first thought, that it was her remembering the time in a mental institution. And so again, he's reading these mm-hmm. thoughts and memories from the people he's seen, or they're in the mental institution and all this other stuff is fake. But then if that's the case, how do they have David? That's my biggest problem with that, is I don't know where the baby comes from.
Right. Because if she, okay, so you watched The Leftovers. So let's right. bring that parallel in. If she was catatonic the whole time, and all of this was in her mind created by Charles, but yet they were still having sex, and so that she could give birth to David, you know, very much like Mary and
James, was it?
No,
Matthew.
Matt, yeah. Right, in The Leftovers, where she's suddenly pregnant and all the doctors are like, oh my gosh, you had sex
right.
with a vegetable of a wife. Like, how could you? How dare you? You know, and he's insistent, no, no, she woke up. So we're going to say now that Charles Xavier, one of the heroes of every X-Men iteration, is not only a shitty dad, but also a rapist.
No, I don't think that's it, because again, we're missing pieces, because we never see what happens from before David is born. We never see, like I said, we never see any right. scene.
We never see her pregnant. We never
see any scene of them before they had a baby. So we really, we're missing too many pieces.
And we do get, well, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but it's just my favorite scene when David talks to himself as a baby. Yeah. But before that, he's musing to Switch. You know, he sees Charles and Gabrielle looking over baby David at a crib, and he goes, and he's, but we hear David talking to Switch saying, look at that, my family, they loved me. I had the love. And he said, you know, why did she leave me? What did I do? What, you know, and is it even possible that this woman is not even really his mother?
It's absolutely anything's possible at this point. We just don't know. It's if you remember from last season, and again, this is why a lot of people I think got upset with last season, but I liked it. It gave us pieces ahead of time and then went back at one point and kind of put all the pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're kind of doing that again.
Noah Hawley will not let us down.
Right.
We will get answers. Okay.
But this is also why the fact that we don't see anything from before he was born, except for the weird broken memories of the mental institution, which again could be broken memories of his mother and father. There's some connection with him as himself. I don't know if maybe he's able to go back before he was born. So maybe he can only go back in time to when he was a baby. You know, he can only see what he saw as a person. We don't know all the rules of time travel yet. So
what if somehow all of Gabrielle was just some sort of veil of Farouk? Because the scene at the end, the very end, where Farouk is rocking him as a baby, where, you know, it was too late. Spoiler alert, David couldn't stop Farouk from invading baby David. And then we are inside baby David's mind, and we see Farouk rocking him like a mother, saying the same words that Gabrielle had said, like, my precious boy, my angel.
Yeah, my beautiful boy.
My beautiful boy. So what if somehow, because of that creepy fucking doll, like, that's our hint right there, that Gabrielle wasn't real, and somehow this is all Farouk. And maybe Farouk raped somebody and somehow maybe Farouk is asexual, you know, much like Daenerys, you know, has dragon eggs that she was able to, quote unquote, birth in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if Farouk was somehow able to birth a child? I'm going way off now. There's no way. There's just no way. You know, but there is the pregnant virgin, right, with David. So there's something telling us there that people can get pregnant even being penis free, right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, that would be a reason that would make sense of why they're even showing the pregnant virgin as it's going to connect to something else.
Because I don't think the house is real. That's all created by Charles's mind. I think the show explicitly told us that and showed.
Okay. Here's what I think. I think part of the house is real.
How can part of the house be real? What part?
I mean, I think that there are scenes within the house that are real.
Okay.
I think that whenever we see her writing the letter to Charles while he's gone, I think the whole time while Charles is gone is real. So whenever she's by herself, it's real. I think because we see at the end where it looks like she's been writing this letter throughout the episode, we see that it's this piece of paper with just like a line on it. So I think that's supposed to show us her sanity is already starting to break at that point. And that's also when we get and I think it's more because she's depressed. She misses him. This is also when we see the Shadow King starting to, she gets the call from Charles. He talks about the Shadow King being awful, blah, blah, blah. He's coming home. We see the shadow behind her, walking behind her. And at this point, I think a lot of the scenes we see with the shadow, with a lot of the doors opening and closing, it's a mixture of David kind of coming in and out, but also the Shadow King is kind of messing with her at that point. So I think her sanity's breaking.
Could be messing with her. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he could be messing with her from the mental institution. Her mind space
right.
is in this house, but it's all still happening from the mental institution. Dave sees it still from her mind because he's in her mind rather than seeing it for reality.
I have this wild theory that the mental institution is actually happening after everything we saw in the house.
Oh,
they were together, and maybe they even met in a mental institution to begin with, but they were together. Everything happens. She goes comatose, ends up back in the mental institution, because when I watch it over and over, Charles seems to purposely put himself in there. He obviously is not a mute like he seems when he's talking to the doctor. He's just sitting there silently. He knows what he should be saying and everything, but he sits there silently purposely so he can get into the room. He seeks her out. As soon as he sees her, And it's almost like she's seeing him. Like we said, she's staring at him, but she's not. Her body's actually turned away. But when he sees her, she's staring at him. He immediately brings his chair over, asks about her, kind of walks off for a while. And he's going after her at that point to try to wake her up. Even when she first finally wakes up and he walks over to the window and she just says hi to him, the way he chuckles and it's like, huh, hi, like he's almost like he can't believe she's there. And the way he's even talking with her, the way he kind of falls in love with her so quickly, it seems, I kind of had this feeling like he already knew who she was. He already was trying to wake her up. And we do start seeing a lot of parallels at that point of her already kind of maybe broken or taken over by Farouk. There's the scene where they're eating cherry pie, and behind her, every time they show her, is that spider web window, and it's bright red. It's bright red, the spider web. And every time they show him, everything else is blue, but behind her it's red. So we're already seeing that red behind her, which we know is an important color in this season. Anger, hate. So that red craziness is behind her.
Ooh, and the song, she comes in colors.
Well, and that even comes in. But then, that is, could be where even after that, he kind of makes up, you know, pretend stuff for, like, but they're still in this institution. When they leave the mental institution, that window is off to the left of them, but it's not bright red at that point. The center of it's red. The rest of it's kind of yellowish, but they walk out. Later on, when we see in the nursery, when David appears to Gabriel, behind her in the doorway is that same spider window, bright red. And so I don't know if it's supposed to represent Farouk, if it's supposed to just represent her sanity, but there's definitely a lot of parallels between the house and the mental institution. So I don't know what is real and what is not. I think all of it's a little real and all of it's a little fake. That's why, again, I think it's this combination of almost David picking from not just what actually he sees, but he's pulling from people's brains, and it's just this mashup of what's going on.
All right. Well, let's talk about the occurrences in the house and what we can try to do them as linearly as possible, because I'm starting to think now as we go through this that Gabrielle is actually not even real, or she was part of Farouk's master plan, started with her she was possessed by Farouk, and it all started. That's what started the whole fight between Farouk and Charles. And then when she died, which I still think she dies at the end of this episode now, because that's when the cloud of Farouk smoke actually goes into baby David. We see it happen right then and there. So could be the whole Farouk thing started with Gabrielle, but let's put a pin in that for just a second and talk about what's happening in this house that I don't think is real.
Okay.
So if we talk about it linearly, we never see the baby born. We're to believe they've lived happily in this house now for at least long enough for a baby to be born.
Yeah.
But we do see we see lots and lots of scenes of them cooing and awing over baby David in the crib, especially Gabrielle. The one scene where she's reading to him was really, really cool. Let me see if I can find that in my notes.
Harold and the Purple Crayon.
Yes, Harold and the Purple Crayon. And he's got that creepy doll in the crib with him. And she's saying some words that are really parallel. Well, she's reading the book, and we see Charles building Cerebro in the basement of the house, right, or whatever. And the dialogue she's reading in the books are about how Harold has gone too far. He can't turn back now. I'm trying to find it.
Well, we have this book that
we read. Oh, you do? It's real?
Yeah. It's a real book. My wife's a first grade teacher, and like I said, we got two young kids. So if I see children's books, I usually know what the parallel is. So Harold and the Purple Crayon is about Harold, who has this crayon where basically he can create his own world. So it's obviously David. The parallel being, like you said, he tries to draw something that he thinks important to him. Then he draws this dragon or this monster, obviously, to kind of protect what he thinks is important to him. But then it's so scary what he draws is he realizes he kind of goes over his head. He kind of goes too far. So we're seeing David obviously doing that. What he's trying to protect what he thinks is important to him. He's obviously not thinking of the consequences or what might be too far.
But we're also seeing Charles in what could presumably be something is in over his head. Because, yes, absolutely. Right as she's saying Harold is in over his head, that's when Charles puts on Cerebro for maybe the first time ever. And that's when he gets those first visions of Farouk. And
absolutely.
His face, while wearing Cerebro, his face that we see is totally terrified, 100%. So why would he just immediately take off to Morocco to find this man if he was so terrified?
Right. I do think through that Cerebro scene, when we see all these overlays, again, I believe that we're kind of seeing the future of what's going to happen between him and Farouk, because it kind of shows from his point of view, him sitting at the other end of the table talking to mm-hmm. Farouk. And he does already through Cerebro sense this presence, this monstrous presence. But at the same time, you can tell that he's too curious to just let it go. Or, I mean, then that is kind of the parallel of Charles and David. Charles is doing what he thinks is the right thing and what he thinks is the good intention. But at the end, he doesn't even think of the fact that you're leaving your wife and your kid, which he doesn't even realize he's leaving them completely undefended by anything, but he's leaving his wife and children to go seek out an equal.
But maybe that he never left. Maybe that was all because that's from Gabrielle's head in the fake house. Maybe what he was really going to do was try to stop Farouk. Maybe he saw a vision of Farouk's plan and he knew that Farouk was somehow connected to Gabrielle. And maybe, all right. I want to talk about this one last scene that we do get of the happy family, which we presume took place before he quote unquote leaves for Morocco. And that, and throughout all of these scenes, of course, David is, we don't necessarily see him, but we hear his voiceover talking with Switch as he's observing it. And so my favorite scene is that one of them standing over the crib, Charles and Gabrielle, and they do have that conversation that we saw from the teaser where they're saying, she's saying, you know, or he is actually saying, do you think he'll grow up and be like me? And she's like, well, do you want him to be like me? And then she does say, you know, I think he'll be fine. He'll be himself. And then they walk out of the room. And then we get this beautiful, oh, Dan Stevens, I love you so much. We get this great scene of him coming over and looking into the crib at his own baby self and saying, hi, baby me. And he's cooing over him. And it's so sweet and cute. What did you think of that scene?
I liked it. I thought it paralleled with Gabrielle earlier is talking just to David by herself, or she's thinking about it, I think, and asking. It's when we kind of see the flashbacks from the pilot of David growing up. And she's asking, what will you become?
Right.
Will you fight in wars? Will you become something? Will you be like your dad and a good shepherd? And then she says, or will you be like me and let the horrors of the world or learn of the, like all the horrors of the world, and let them get you down or something like that. So it is our, again, this battle of, is he going to use his powers for good, or is he going to let the bad things that happen to him kind of break his mind down and corrupt him?
Right. And then this is the same scene where David is, as he's observing his happy family, this is where he's also musing, he's also saying things to Switch like, why did she give me away? What was wrong with me? Why didn't she love me? I mean, this is where David's naivete, I'm willing to say, is coming into place. Because if he can't see how his own actions, again, the Hodor thing, can't see how his own actions are causing her mental instability and causing her to unravel and be unable to, you know, he's creating her breakdown, in other words. Because then the other scenes we get of the house are presumably after Charles has left to go on this trip to find, to go to Morocco to find Farouk. And so then all the scenes we see of Gabrielle are weird and creepy, even have creepy music behind them. Or they start with David, you know, doing the hippy dippy music trying to reach her, and we see that overlay on the screen of David dancing with his hippie commune, you know, and she can hear the music. We can see her eyes looking around, darting around, hearing music, but it's freaking her the fuck out. And then there is the scene where she goes out and there's just this random door to nowhere in her front yard. And, you know, she's going around looking at either side of it, and she does reach out and touch it, but it flashes away. That's the door you're talking about that we see in several other scenes too. I thought that was a David door, right? No, I thought that was the door David and Switch were somehow coming through. Like,
that's
to let us know she was getting close to being able to speak with him, but she wasn't quite there.
The door is actually the front door of the house. Those doors, I tried to look for those doors throughout the episode again. They're the front doors of the house. They're just moved out into the yard for some reason.
Okay, well, that is creepy. That's like some poltergeist shit.
No, it's weird. Yeah, the window I kept talking about is this window that almost has, like I said, it's like the spider web pattern. And we see it in the mental institution, and then again at the very last scene in the when everything happens in the nursery, we see it in the hallway, and it's this bright red window. And again, I think it somehow represents her breakdown of her sanity or something behind her. I don't know, but it's crazy.
It is crazy. So other scenes we see of her freaking out, and this is a lot where she's in the nightgown. You know, she'll wake up at night from hearing the music, and we hear her montage of her letter that she's writing to Charles, supposedly. Because when we see the actual scene of her writing, it's just a scribble. It's just a nothing.
Right.
So, like, she might be composing this letter in her head, but maybe it never really went out on paper because it's all happening from the mental institution. But she is saying things like, I'm being haunted. Please come home. You know, why did you ever leave me? And the final, this is where she also does get the call, but they have a bad connection. And he said, and Charles, we can hear what he's saying, but she can't hear. And it is very staticky. He says, I'm coming home immediately. I never should have left. He's a monster. He's a monster. And she can't hear him. So, you know, again, I still think he must have somehow maybe he got checked out of the mental institution. That was the quote unquote leaving. But then he realized that Gabrielle still in the mental institution was under attack by Farouk, and he had to go back. Maybe he never even knew about the baby. This was all part of this dreamscape that, you know, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, I'm going off on a tear because I still think Farouk's behind all of this.
In the comics, I don't think Xavier ever knew about David until he was a teenager, so that might fit there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we see the house. She's constantly walking around. There's the open doors everywhere. That kind of is the main thing she's seeing. She's hearing possibly David every now and then, too. And then we get the great scene with her watching television.
Oh, I have a big thing about this. Love this. This is Switch's dad on the TV.
Right.
And he starts, and he's saying, bedtime is nearly here. Later on, you know, then the TV cuts on and off. And when it cuts back on, in one scene, he finally does say, bedtime is here. And that's when she finally turns it off and goes to bed. And those are direct callbacks to that opening scene of the first episode of this season, right? That was so great. So great. I love that. I knew you caught that too.
I also like that where in that scene when David's trying to kind of cut through the TV because he's trying to reach her through that. That's when we first see, I think it's the second or third time we see the smoke, but it's the first time the smoke is trying to grab the baby.
Right.
And this is the first time we see David kind of break through finally of this, you know, of being just a ghost. Switch even says, use your powers. And we see that big glow around baby David and kind of rejects the reach of the Shadow King. So he's starting to break through at this point, but yeah, it's almost a little too late.
Well, what happens next is really just kind of out of a horror scene, but it is when the TV switches dad on the TV does finally say, so the whole time throughout all of these scenes of Gabrielle just becoming increasingly more freaked out, We hear, and she hears it too, but doesn't respond to it other than the hippie music. But we can hear David saying, Mama, Mommy, Mommy, why doesn't she see me? Why won't she see me? you know, I'm right here, mama. And it just, your heart just bleeds for him. But in this scene, yeah, when Switch is finally like, do something else, it's not working. It's clear that they're somehow trying to send messages through the TV too, or Farouk is, because at first it, the TV is saying bedtime is nearly here. And this is where David is saying to Switch, he's almost here. I can feel it. We've got to hurry. He's almost here. We're running out of time. He's frantic at this point. And that's in when she says, use your powers. And he also, before he does that, he tries to get his own baby self to cry and make her turn around. So he's like, cry, cry, cry harder. But then when the TV snaps back on and says bedtime is here, that's when this whole horror sequence starts, because she snaps it off. And the next thing we see is her waking up from her bed, and she's trapped in a room, her bedroom, which now has no windows or doors, and she can't get out. And all we hear is David, baby David, crying horribly from the other room. And she's screaming, and she can't get to him. And she's screaming, David, David, and she just can't get to him. And it's awful. Then she finally does break through and get to him, or runs to him in the crib. And now he's a baby with no face. He's got hair growing all around his head. And she screams really loud. And we see a flash. I still think that must be the Shadow King's face flash, or David or Legion's face flash. But when she screams, another face pops in screaming. And then baby David is bounced back to normal. And at that point, an apparition of David, adult David, is hovering over the crib, and she sees him for the first time. And he says, it's me. I'm here from the future. And, you know, don't freak out. But at that very moment, Charles runs in, home from his trip to Morocco, probably really just returning to the mental institution. But he sees that apparition, and before he even can get an explanation, I'm sure he just assumes it's Farouk, and he banishes him with his mind, pushing David and Switch really all the way back out their time door, Switch's time door. So we'll come back to that scene in a minute, but
let's finish that scene, then we'll go to the time hole.
Well, because I really think that David's affecting that moment right there, and Professor X thinking he was banishing Farouk, not banishing David, didn't know he was banishing David from the future. So that's the Hodor moment right there. That's the cause and effect of something, that looped time travel of something from the present going back into the past and then affecting it and making it, making what made him get infected with Farouk in the first place. Because if Charles had run in and banished Farouk instead of David, if David hadn't been messing with time and somehow Charles had been able to go in and banish Farouk, maybe all of this wouldn't have happened, right?
Right. I love the scene. Double-headed or double-back-headed baby was the most horrific thing I've seen on television in quite a while.
Yeah, it was awful.
When David pops up as the apparition, did you notice that like half of him almost looked like melted or something? He definitely, if you see that again, it's not just David. I couldn't tell if it was an overlay of somebody else, cause it didn't look like Switch, but maybe either Farouk was with him, or it also kind of looked like half of him was an old David. And I'd have wondered if maybe him trying to break through the timelines again, there's some kind of side effect where he can't just walk through. Obviously he can't just walk through. We've seen that already. So maybe it's like every David of all time trying to kind of reach at that point. So it was very interesting there. That's when Xavier shoots him out. That's where you see again the window from the insane asylum behind him. And then the coolest effect, and I don't think I caught this till the third time I watched this, when the shadow starts popping, like, so when Charles is comforting Gabrielle on the floor, right before the shadow starts pooling up above the crib where the two lights are, glasses appear around them, and it's Farouk's glasses in the wall. You see the silhouette of his glasses, and then the shadow comes up, and when the shadow comes up, it actually forms the bottom legs in like the that kind of smock that the yellow-eyed demon wears, that like garbage bag that he wears. It's the same shape of his legs and that smock from below, and then it just all goes into David. It was very cool visual as far as giving you not just the human visual of Farouk, but also the monster visual. of him going into to David. So it was a very, very detailed scene. A lot of subtle stuff going on there.
I'm going to have to go back and watch that. That sounds really cool. Yeah, and wait, I want to say,
watch that last scene.
I want to just insert, you said Charles is holding, comforting or holding Gabrielle on the floor in front of the crib. No, Charles is holding Gabrielle's dead body in front of the crib and crying and weeping over her deadness.
He tries to use his powers, so I assume she was in a coma. Again, I'm still sticking with this. This is the beginning of right before they're about to go back to the mental institution.
Because any rational person, David saying that, why did she leave me? Why didn't she love me? Every scene he sees is a mother just totally 100% in love with her child and trying to do everything she can to protect him, failing miserably, but still. So those questions are not accurate. He should be able to see that, no, something else was at play here. Of course, it was him from the future affecting the past, but, you know. In other words, she didn't abandon him. Either she died or he was taken from her. There's no way that mother abandoned her child.
I mean, it's hard to say. We'll figure it out. So, all right, let's move to the last scene, which I call the more exhibit F of David is a selfish son of a bitch. He's not a good person. He deserves nothing.
Oh, this one hurt. So this is when they are thrust back through Switch's time door. Cool shot. This is when Charles zapped or used his powers to push them back. And you're talking about this scene, right?
Yes. Yeah.
They go through, they're back through the door. They come tumbling out the door. It was a very cool effect. David comes tumbling out first and he's immediately like, we have to go back. We have to go back. I mean, he's not even hesitating.
Nope.
Switch comes tumbling out and she is a disaster. She is barely even able to hold up her head. And, she, you know, obviously it's taken a toll. And she pulls out another tooth. From what we can tell, it looks like she pulls out her last tooth because her mouth and gums are all bloody. It's hard to tell how many teeth she still has in there. But he is just saying, we have to go back. And she's saying, I can't, you know. And he's not even concerned for her well-being whatsoever. Is this what you're referring to, Dean?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only that, but when Switch comes out, she looks like she's about to pass out. And the first thing, before she even pulls out her tooth, the first thing she asks is, are you all right? She's worried about David. So it just, again, I don't know what in the world Switch sees in him or why she continuously believes in him with no question whatsoever. But she's so altruistic versus him only caring about his mission or purpose or goal and couldn't care less that she looks like she's about to die.
I agree. It was not a good look for David. Not good.
And then when he starts yelling, he's got to go back. He looks like he's starting to go nuclear again. So I'm wondering what's going to happen there. Is he going to blow up the, you know, if he blows up in the time stream, what happens?
Good question. I think what happens is Farouk continues to manipulate everybody. That's what happens because David just can't be reasoned with. So he's allowing David's the worst goalie of all time. He is allowing Farouk every single opportunity to make the goal every time. He gives him a way in every time. So the final scene, as like you've already described, when the smoke goes into baby David, then we zoom in through baby David's eye, which was also a very cool scene. And we see Farouk in an all-black room rocking baby David and saying, my angel, my beautiful boy.
My angel, Nessus. My beautiful boy.
The first sign that it was Farouk was in David's head since he was a baby, treating him as his child and trying to raise him as his own.
Farouk tried to tell him last season that he has been loved since he was a baby for 30 plus years. Farouk's been trying to love him, and David unfortunately won't accept it. If he would just accept Farouk's love, I think everything would be okay.
I understand people not wanting to be on Team David. I get it. But how can you possibly say Team Shadow King after seeing this episode? He is a monster. He is horrible.
I think you're just seeing it through David's eyes. He's got you completely, you know, legion drunk. You're looking at it through blue or possibly red colored lenses.
Looking at it through Lenny's eyes. We didn't get enough Lenny of this episode.
No, I think she flashed in at one point during yep. one of those interstitials, but no, that's if there was one drawback to this, no Lenny, that's no good.
Yes, agree.
But it looks like next week, I think we'll get all the characters back. I think we'll get a little bit more of the blanks from this episode filled in. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to start seeing, this will be what episode, this was episode 3, right?
Right.
So we have five more. So I think we got to start kicking in the gear here next week.
I think we will see, just like 1 and 2 paralleled each other, I think a little bit, maybe not the whole episode, hopefully not, because you're right, they're going to run out of time. But I do believe we'll see, because we already saw that a little bit in the trailer, the effects on the current time happening in Division 3 because of what David's continuing to go back in the past. And I do believe that Switch is going to just explicitly let him know, we can't go back that far again. I'll die. It'll be done, you know. And so that's when he might start trying to go back, you know, just a little ways to, he might be like, okay, well, we got the Shadow King out of me. Maybe I just have to go back and get the folks at Division 3 back on my side. You know, I don't know. I don't know what his next play is going to be.
I think what happens with him and Switch will be the final, and no pun intended as I was about to say, this will be the final kind of switch between whether he's good or bad. If he does decide that he doesn't want to sacrifice her for what he wants, then we might see some redemption. But it also, she might be such a pure person that he just throws the wayside for what he wants to accomplish. That might be where we finally see that he is unredeemable and he is the flat out bad guy of this show, which I know you and many people who have been, you know, rooting for him don't want, but Legion is a bad guy. And maybe you don't see show. I think that would be brilliant. A show where we actually get tricked into rooting for the bad guy through pretty much all. I mean, it's, you know, it's Walter White all over again.
Mm,
he was a bad guy, but we loved following him.
Mm-hmm. Well, any other final thoughts on this episode before we start to close out here?
Nothing in this episode is real.
You heard it here first, folks. there was one scene, and I, you know, you can't always rely on trailers. I know they'll put things in trailers that don't always happen in shows now, especially in shows like this. You know, I can't remember the last show they did that with, but they did it with Marvel's Endgame, right? They put stuff mm-hmm. in the trailer that wasn't in the movie, spoiler right. alert, just to throw people off. So we did see in the trailer for the whole show, the teaser, I think, before the season started, we saw that one flash of Harry Lloyd staring out what we thought was possibly looking right at David and saying, "My son." So we didn't get that in this episode. So does that mean we are still going to get more Harry Lloyd and more flashes and somehow Professor X coming face to face with David from the future and realizing what's happening here? I think that's got to be the climactic moment that helps fix it and make David still redeemable.
I definitely, I said this the first season or the first episode we did for covering the premiere. I don't think that we'll ever see an older Charles Xavier. So if it happens, it has to be him somehow recognizing this presence coming back in time. Just mm-hmm. like I already think that Farouk has already figured out that David has been coming back in time. I think we're going to see that Farouk's already ahead of the game there, but I do
Farouk
think
in the past has figured it out. You mean, cause we know Farouk in the present.
Yeah. I think Farouk in the past has, mm-hmm. whether it's actually Farouk in the past or again, whether Farouk from the future has figured out a way to somehow hitch a ride or hijack. Cause we saw him jump to that future space with future Sid last season with his little awesome car. So maybe he's powered up the purple goop again and figured out a way to get back there. But yeah, I think Xavier's definitely going to have to, we're going to see some confrontation or some mental meeting of the minds between them.
Well, more to come. All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening. Of course, follow us on Twitter at MikeTV1. And thank you, Dean, as always, for joining us or for being my co-host. Really, this is our show. It's not my show. It's our show. So we're going to, as we've already teased out, I'll just continue to say it. We will be covering Preacher here very soon. And that will overlap with some of our Legion coverage. And then we will tease out other shows that we're watching. You got a little sneak peek of just what we are watching in general that we won't be covering. We mentioned that at the top of the episode. But we would love to hear from you on Twitter. Please send us a tweet if you would rather DM us. You know, just follow us. We'll follow you back. And then you can just send it to us privately if there are shows you'd like us to cover or if you want to have a private conversation. We'll get some other lines of communication open also very soon. Hey, Dean gets people follow. He gets Tweegen. He gets Legion retweeting him and, liking his tweets. So if there's anybody you should follow, it's definitely Dean. You want to give out your Twitter handle?
Yes. Follow me on Twitter at Rockdale_Tiger. You can also meet me in the Radio Shack, the Radio Labyrinth Facebook fan group. And I'm Dean Poole. You'll find me there as well.
And thank you to Radio Labyrinth for hosting us on this channel. And folks, if you are listening, we'd love to hear your feedback. I know Radio Labyrinth would love your reviews and ratings, and we'd love to hear if you're listening to Mike TV and what your thoughts are also on our show. So you can do all of that on the Radio Labyrinth iTunes page or wherever you get your podcasts. Send us some feedback. We would be delighted. So thank you again, everybody. We will see you next week. And thanks again, Dean. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye, Lisa.